difference, 0G weightlessness. Of course, he felt just the opposite as the clipper ship lifted off. A force of 3 gravities squashed him down in his seat, made his arms feel like lead weights. The noise was muffled by the passenger cabin's acoustic insulation, but still he could hear the roar of 1,000 dragons bellowing from the clipper ship's rocket engines. The vibration was scary, too. And then it abruptly stopped. His arms floated off the seat rests. If he hadn't been buckled into the chair, he would have floated free. It wasn't so bad. Feingold actually felt almost exhilarated. Until he turned his head to look at the passenger beside him. Then everything swayed and his stomach went hollow as if he were falling from a great height. He gulped down bile and gritted his teeth. Just relax, he told himself, trying to remember the instruction files he'd read. It's not like seasickness. It's just the fluids in your body rearranging themselves because they're no longer being pulled down by gravity. Methodically, he inventoried his symptoms, comparing them to what he'd read. Stuffy head, empty gut, balance system in the ears, saying you're falling, but your eyes tell you you're safely strapped into this nice padded chair. By the time the clipper ship connected to the space station's airlock, Feingold felt that he could deal with 0G. Then he realized that they weren't in weightlessness anymore. The space station rotated to produce a feeling of nearly normal Earth gravity. The ship now shared that rotation and the feeling of weight it produced. Feingold grinned as he unstrapped and stood up. I'm a space veteran, he told himself. He didn't see much of the space station. A pair of uniformed attendants met him at the airlock and escorted him to the fusion torch ship that would take him to the asteroid belt. He didn't see the exterior of the fusion vessel at all. Its interior seemed larger than the clipper ship, but he was the vessel's only passenger. The attendants left him in a spacious compartment that looked to Feingold like some sort of lounge. The floor was carpeted, he saw. Comfortable, upholstered chairs were scattered here and there, and one wall, bulkhead, he remembered was the correct term, had a bar built into it. The attendants from the space station left him there with a smiling, "Have a pleasant trip." For several empty moments, Feingold just stood there, surrounded by the luxury, uncertain of what he was supposed to do. Then a young woman in a sleek, dolphin-gray uniform stepped into the lounge and gave him a dazzling smile. "Welcome aboard the Darling Clementine, Dr. Feingold," she said cheerily. "You must be a very important person to have the ship all to yourself," she pronounced the capitals distinctly. Feingold couldn't help staring at her. "My name's Philomena Newberg, and I'll be your hostess for this flight."
"Philomena Newberg?" he asked.
"Yeah, Dutch father, Portuguese mother. The guys in the crew call me Lobster Newberg, but you can call me Philly."
She had an outstanding figure, Feingold realized. Some Philly, he thought.
"Shall I show you to your stateroom?" asked Philomena Newberg.
He had to swallow twice before he could reply.
"Please do."
Darling Clementine rode its fusion torch engine at close to 1G all the way out to the belt, accelerating halfway and then reversing thrust to decelerate. Feingold had his run of the ship. He met and dined with the crew, pilot, navigator, engineer, and flight attendant Philly. The navigator was another woman, almost as young as Philly, but quiet, stolid, the kind of social introvert that gave technical people the reputation of being nerds. The pilot and engineer were cheerful enough, bright and intelligent. They took turns showing Feingold every aspect of the ship. "We have to angle quite a bit out of the ecliptic," the flight engineer told Feingold as they neared the end of their 5-day flight. "The roid we're going to has a high inclination." Feingold knew that Martin Humphreys had ordered the asteroid moved to its peculiar orbit to discourage visitors. "If you don't mind my asking," the engineer went on, "what's so important about this chunk of rock? Why's HSS got a ship stationed by it all the time?" Feingold studied the young man's face closely. He had seen that expression in classrooms many times. The kid knew the answer to his question. He just wanted the professor to acknowledge that he had the right information. Feingold decided to be enigmatic. "I think you know the answer to your question as well as I do." The engineer's eyes brightened.
So it's true? There's an alien artifact inside the rock? With a sly smile, Feingold replied, That's what people say. The engineer broke into a laugh. You're supposed to keep it secret, huh? Feingold gave him a shrug. Well, maybe I'll ask Philly to spend our last night with you and worm the information out of you. Feingold felt his cheeks redden as he thought, I wish. Chapter 4 By the time the fusion ship established its parking orbit around asteroid 67-046, Feingold had the beginnings of a trim little mustache sprouting on his upper lip. He had worn a mustache ages ago when he'd been a snotty young undergrad student, but once he started his work as a researcher, he quickly learned that the powers that be much preferred up-and-coming scientists to be clean-shaven. Feingold felt that his mustache was a small price to pay for advancement up the ladder of success. Now, a career and a lifetime later, he spent the 5 days of the trip to the asteroid regrowing his old mustache. It came in gray, of course, but none of the crew twitted him about it, and Philly even seemed to like it. As he inspected himself in the metal mirror above the sink in his stateroom's lavatory, he thought, I can always shave it off on the trip back home. Feingold thought he'd have to wear a spacesuit to go down to the asteroid's surface, but he found that the Humphreys Space Systems team that was stationed in orbit around 67-046 had built an airtight dome on the surface of the little asteroid. Not so little, Feingold thought as he rode an HSS shuttlecraft to the dark, pitted, rough-surfaced rock. 10 kilometers wide sounds piffling compared to the size of a planet or moon, but as the austere little shuttlecraft came down for its landing, the rock grew bigger and bigger until it filled Feingold's vision entirely. He saw boulders and swaths of what must be dust, and finally the glass-steel bubble that had been erected over the entrance to the tunnel that led to the artifact's chamber deep inside the rocky asteroid. Once the craft had set down on its springy, spidery legs, a segmented access tube inched across the few meters of bare rock from the transparent dome and connected itself to the shuttlecraft's airlock. Within minutes, Feingold was able to walk in his shirt sleeves to the dome, although the almost non-existent gravity of the asteroid caused him to bounce and stumble when he took his first steps. He had to steady himself by reaching out to the sides of the tube as he walked. Inside the dome, he was greeted by a stubble-jawed, weary-eyed technician in rumpled coveralls bearing the HSS logo, who opened the metal hatch that led into the tunnel. "Just follow the tunnel," he said in a raw, scratchy voice. It sounded to Feingold as if the man hadn't spoken aloud in quite a while. He wondered how long he'd been stationed on the rock. "Are you all alone here?" Feingold asked. The tech shook his head. "Nah, there's three of us. We rotate shifts, 2 days down here, then 4 days up in the ship."
"You mean, even when there's no visitors, somebody's stationed down here?"
The tech nodded bleakly.
"Orders from Mr. Humphreys' own self."
"How long are you stationed out here?"
3 months at a time."
"Just the three of you?" The man nodded unhappily.
"It don't pay to get on Mr. Humphreys' shit list."
Feingold wanted to say something more, but he found that he didn't know what it should be. The technician gestured to the open hatch.
"The chamber has an automatic gate. It's closed now, but by the time you get down there, it ought to be just about ready to open. Stays open for an hour, at least."
"An hour?"
"More or less. The gate operates on its own schedule, almost at random, but not quite."
"I understand," Feingold said. He saw clearly that the technician wasn't going down the tunnel with him. Squaring his bony shoulders and straightening his back as much as he could, he stepped through the hatch and started down the tunnel. It was warm inside, and the gravity felt almost Earth-normal. The tunnel was narrow, and in places so low that Feingold ducked his head as he walked along its downward slope. "Must be an old lava tube," he said to himself. But then the ceiling got higher and smoother. The walls and floor were smoothed, too. The tunnel made a sharp turn to the right, and Feingold found himself in front of an utterly blank metal door that completely blocked the tunnel. Before he could think of anything to do or say, the metal slid silently upward and disappeared into the ceiling. Looking down,